This is the Spurs Cast with your host, Paul Garcia.
And welcome back to another episode of the Spurs Cast. On today's episode, I will be speaking with Project Spurs writer Colin Reed. In this episode, Colin and I will discuss the San Antonio Spurs' team salary going into the offseason. Let's go ahead and jump right into this episode with Colin. Colin, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's one of my favorite times of the year. The playoffs are starting. You know, last weekend was the 8 games in 2 days, but the play-in has made that even better because you had 10 postseason games from the whole weekend. It's amazing. I love it. It definitely is made every night fun. You can just turn it on and there's a quality game every night. I love it.
I love it too, man. Like it's so good. The fact that we didn't really have a clear favorite this year, and that's what makes it even better. It's like, we really don't know who's going to come out of this at the end of the day, you know, once June comes around in the finals. So I'm having a great time watching the playoffs. I know the Spurs aren't in there, but I mean, it's just really fun to watch more of these very even teams. Now there are some series that kind of get away from, you know, like the Sixers series and stuff, but you know, it's been a really fun time. But Colin, let's go ahead and jump into the free agency for the Spurs. They're upcoming off season. So that's what we want to talk about. Just the initial steps of it, just because there is still a long time until free agency of it actually comes around on July 1st, and we're barely in mid-April, late April. All right, so let's first begin with some news and notes, Colin, from the off about what's happened this past week. Even though the Spurs aren't playing basketball, there was some news regarding their team. So we had talked about it was Joe Garcia and I had last spoken about the Spurs and Rockets finishing the regular season with the same record. So we didn't know who was going to actually get the second have the second worst record, which means that you're still going to have a 14% chance at the number one pick, but in a worst case scenario, if you end up with the third worst record, you can become seventh and you can fall all the way to seventh. There's a potential there for that to happen. And so the Spurs were in a random drawing with the Houston Rockets on Monday. And after that took place, the NBA announced that the Rockets won that basically coin flip. And so in a worst case scenario, Houston can only fall to six, whereas San Antonio can now fall to seven in the lottery. Now there's a very, very small chance of that happening to either team. So the Spurs is, you know, still best odds are to end up with a top three pick there, since they have a 14% chance with the Rockets and with the Detroit Pistons. What else do I want to note here? Also from that drawing, we do want to note that once we find out who gets that second worst record, who gets the lottery pick, it'll impact the Spurs' second round pick. They're either going to get the 32nd pick or 33rd pick. It kind of depends on where they and the Rockets end up. And then lastly, they are also going to have the 44th pick in via the Toronto Raptors in the second round. So they're going to basically go into this draft with three picks, one in the first round and two in the second round. There's also some CBA updates now from Shams Charania of The Athletic. Now, again, we want to note that none of this is actually set in stone yet. You know, they haven't actually written out the agreement. These are just things that have been agreed to by both sides, the players union and the NBA. And so Shams and Woj are continuing to report different numbers and different new details from the deal. So one of the details that we talked about when you and I last spoke a few weeks ago was the room exception is definitely getting a 30% increase. So it's going from $5.5 million to $7.6 million, like we spoke about. But one new detail is that max contracts for that type of deal can now be up to 3 years in length, according to Shams. And then lastly, there's going to be a second round pick exception. The details are still a little vague here. Shams reported that that the players can sign for 3 to 4 years contract length up to the minimum salary. He also mentioned for a third year player that didn't make too much sense. I wasn't sure just quite yet. I mean, I think there's more details we're waiting to see. But that's important for the Spurs, that second round pick exception, because like I said, they're going to end up going into this draft with two second round picks. What are your thoughts on how the coin flip went, and then also just any of these new details from the CBA?
Yeah, so the coin flip obviously not going the Spurs way is tough, and that's one of those things where the last day of the regular season we had the tank fest between the Mavs and the Spurs, and I think it came to a place, and I know, you know, everyone was like, why did the league investigate the Mavs and not a team like the Spurs or the Rockets? And I think that last game of the regular season was like a clear example as to why, because both teams had very big incentive to lose that game. And like the Spurs, you know, they might rest Devin Vassell, even if it's just like a little small injury, or they might rest Sohan because, you know, he stubbed his toe 4 weeks ago or something like that. But like, they are not trying to be like anti-competitive. And like, when the guys are out there on the floor, like Pop still demands a certain level of execution. Like, he's still trying to run his game plan. Like, they might be out talented, and we've talked about this all year, but they're not going to go like, hey, let's just try to lose with the guys on the court. Yeah. And like the Mavs, you know, they were like, oh, well, you know, we're close to the play-in. Like, we have one of the league's biggest stars, this international star, but it's better for us to get potentially Victor, but, you know, at least even a pick at all. So we're going to you know, kind of go to that anti-competitive level. And I think the lack of talent on the Spurs side was outweighed by the absolute just trying to lose by the Mavs. But that was a big game, because if they would have lost that game, then there wouldn't have even had to be a coin flip to begin with. You know, it's one of those things where you look back on it, but you can't look at just one experience. You know, I know the Rockets, there was that time where the Rockets beat the Spurs, I think, two games in one weekend. I think that was when I saw you last, even. And like, that was obviously a big deal. Any one of those games going different, and then we're looking at a different scenario too. So, you know, I think it looks unfortunate, but like, as we talk, you know, I know some of what we're going to talk about is free agency, but looking at the Spurs' needs, I think a lot of the players projected at the top of the draft fit what the Spurs need on this roster right now.
Okay.
Except for Victor, who cares? Like, you build the roster around him, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
I think one of the things about the second round pick exception. So we talked about it a little bit earlier, but two things that I had actually, I came up with a second idea. My first one is, I'm wondering if he misspoke and he meant two-way player exception, because this is a minimum salary, 3 to 4 year minimum. A minimum exception can only go out 2 years. So the 3 to 4 years is a little bit more than that. That is a little bit interesting there. So up to this point, two ways can only be first or second year players. So maybe when he's saying third year, he means a third year can now be a two-way player.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I'm wondering if that means is a player who is not drafted in the first round, who is brought in the NBA on anything other than a rookie scale contract, if they are free agents before, like, it's like before their fourth season or before their third season or something, they become unrestricted free agents or something like that. And I'm wondering if this is just another tool for teams to be able to give these contracts that are longer in length to these players who look like they have talent, but, you know, they might get kind of snatched away in restricted free agency if they didn't have like the years to be able to give them, or maybe someone would send them a big offer sheet, or, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it's either, I think, has to do with the fact that like they can use this to kind of help the teams that drafted a player in the second round or found an undrafted free agent that would normally be a restricted free agent and like keep them for longer term, or I'm wondering if it has something to do with the two-way. But the more exciting thing about this is the fact that Shams is saying this again. I've heard some other people talking about this too, like the Dunked On guys. I think that the terms are probably getting finalized. So we're not going to have to, like, the fact that Shams had something this specific that came out weeks afterwards, I think we're not going to have to rely on reports say, wait, did he mean this? Did he say it this way? I think we're not far away from the document being published, which obviously will mean that you and I are then waiting for Larry Kuhn to make his FAQ. But after that, then there won't be any more questions, which is nice.
Yeah, I would just a prediction. I would think like for sure, like by like early June, they're doing it. At least a month before free agency and everything kicks into place, because they got to have, you know, the team's got to study this thing and make sure that they're ready to go. And so just to kind of give some context, what Colin mentioned, it was that, like he said, we do see the scenario for some teams where the second round picks, like he said, you can only sign them if you sign a veteran minimum deal, then you can only be for 2 years. So what we're saying, what they're saying here in this new reporting is that if it is that second round exception where they can go 3 to 4 years, sometimes we see that teams that want to sign their second round picks for 3 to 4 year deals, they have to use part of like their biannual exception or their mid-level exception. They basically can't just use the veteran minimum. It doesn't work that way. So maybe that's also another part of it. So again, we'll see what happens as the final details do come in and once that actual document is ready to go in for all of us to read. All right, so now our next topic, Colin, let's go ahead and jump into the Spurs' offseason. What I want to do today, like I said, is just kind of give a breakdown of where their team kind of stands going into the offseason, before the lottery, before the draft, and then before free agency. So we're going to go through each part of the team in terms of like who's on the team right now that we're projecting to be back next year. Then we'll go into the free agency and then, you know, some other details. So let's first begin with the players that are on the roster that have guaranteed contracts that are expected to be back on the team so for next season. So what I do have here is all the players. I'll go ahead and read them. And then if you're looking online, in a visual format, you can see all the salaries. So there are 11 players expected to be back next season who have guaranteed deals, and that would leave 4 open roster spots. So those players are Keldon Johnson, Doug McDermott, Devontae Graham, the first round pick, whoever that is. So it could be Victor Wembanyama, Scoot Henderson, what's the guy's from Alabama's name? I just went blank.
Oh, Brandon. Is it Brandon? Yeah. Brandon Miller. Yeah.
Brandon Miller. Okay. Could be Amon Thompson, you know, whoever, wherever the Spurs end up, you know, drafting. So that first round pick does have a guaranteed salary slot. Then Zach Collins. Now he's on a non-guaranteed deal until June 23rd, but Coach Pop right before the season ended did go out on the record and basically say Zach Collins will be our starting center. So we're assuming they're going to pick up his option. So again, I don't expect him to waive Zach Collins. So I'm putting him in the group of players that are expected to be back next season. They also have Kim Birch, who we didn't see at all this year because he ended the season on the injured list. They had Devin Vassell, Jeremy Sochan, Malachi Branham, Blake Wesley, and then Charles Bassey also has a guaranteed deal. So again, that's 11 players already expected to be back in the team, which means you only have 4 open roster spots. Colin, do you expect any of these players to not be on the roster by day one of the regular season in October?
So it's kind of difficult because I think, you know, the two players that kind of stand out the most to me as, and I don't even know if they wouldn't be on the roster opening night, but that I don't know if they're going to be on the roster at the end of next season. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm doing power rankings, tier one is Kim Birch, like just, he didn't play at all. Yeah. The Spurs have a couple of, you know, they already said Zach Collins is our starting center at least next year. And they have, you know, Charles Bassey, and they have, you know, not officially rostered Dominic Barlow, but they have a couple of like these young guys who have some potential. And I think that they're going to want to see more from Charles Bassey and Dominic Barlow than they would out of Kim Birch. You know, I think, you know, obviously he was there to make the trade work for the Raptors getting Splitter. And then I think kind of like in another tier of likelihood, I would say Devontae Graham, I wouldn't expect to be there by the end of next season. I don't know if like he's good enough that I don't see them just waving him in training camp or something like that. Mm-hmm. But he's definitely someone who I'm looking at as like, I don't expect him to be making it through the end of next year. And if that involves a trade in the offseason where another team can pick him up, or if that involves like, well, he's going into the season, but he's not finishing there. So and I guess the reason why I mentioned him, even though your question is at the beginning of the season, I do think that they'd be open to trading either of those players before the season started. Those are the two that stick out to me. I think beyond that, you know, on Twitter, I kind of tried to do this little like free agent preview with the fans or whatnot, where I was talking about like, hey, who do you think the core is? Hey, and part of the reason why I was doing that was, you know, people kind of the number one answer that you see for the core that people really look at is going to be Jeremy Sochan and Devin Vassell. And you're looking at what this roster needs, but also what those players would need around them. And really, like, creation from the guard spot, a wing size guy who can defend and has wing skills, you know, creation from everywhere on the roster, and shooting. You always need more shooting. And so I look at the top of the draft, you know, the first 4 projected picks, you know, number one, Victor. Number two being Scoot, then Brandon Miller, then Amon Thompson, you know, and it's like their biggest needs, they would have to, and like, I'm not a draft guy, so I don't really know what it's like after the top biggest names, but they would have to fall out of the top 4 to not draft a player that it looks like they at least have the potential to meet one of their big needs. So I think that's where they're with some of these people that they're not super invested in, you know, they're going to wait until after the draft, because like when it comes to guard creation, you know, like if they draft Scoot, they're probably not thinking too hard about like, well, where can we find a point guard that can make, you know, like Trey will probably become the backup at that point, and they're probably going to say we feel good about this for at least a couple of years, you know. And the one thing where I didn't mention a need is Victor, but like I said earlier, if you get Victor, it's not like, oh well, you know, he's not point guard creation. Well, you know, you build around that, you just start from there. And so I think, first of all, that's where some of my optimism lies, is like any, obviously Victor is like changes the course of your franchise, but any of these top 4 players like really fits something that the Spurs need. And so I think, you know, outside of on this list, Kim Birch and Devontae Graham, you could see either any of these players being like, well, you know, they just drafted Amon, or they just drafted Brandon Miller, so I don't know if they need this player on the roster going forward, or you can see them as being important to the Spurs at least next season, maybe not going forward. So I think it's kind of hard because I think a lot of their offseason strategy is going to come up in the draft. But those two players, Graham and Birch, are kind of the two that I'm looking at as, I don't think they're anchored to San Antonio either way, by their side or by the team side.
Okay. I agree with you there, where again, I think that the Spurs would allow those two players, Graham and Birch, to be on the trade block, but they're not going to be aggressively trying to shop them. You know, say mm-hmm. seeing you know who wants to, if a team calls and they're interested, well, then yes, the Spurs I think are going to engage in those conversations. But like you, I don't expect they would be just aggressive and trying to either trade these players or even try to waive a player like Birch, who's in the final waivers contract. Again, I think that they would try to get some sort of value for either of these players, and it would probably take though up until the trade deadline, like we saw this past year with like Josh Richardson and Jakob Poeltl. Doug's a little bit tougher for me, just because again he's also coming into the last year of his deal. But I feel like what you said, wherever they draft, they're gonna. Doug's a great wing to have out there for your shooting, whether it's like Scoot, who has another shooter. If it's Victor Wembanyama, you have another shooter there. So again, I think that Doug as well, they're not gonna be aggressive in shopping him, but I think they would have to make that choice when the trade deadline comes around in February. So yeah, I do expect most of these players to be on the roster unless there's like some sort of trade where they need to take and they need some roster space. Maybe that happens. I could see that, one of these players being involved there. But aside from that, I'm with you. I mean, I don't think they'll be super aggressive, but I definitely think they'll take calls on all three of those players, this offseason and going into free agency. All right, so those are the players, again, with guaranteed deals. So again, you have 11 players on the roster. That means you have four open spot roster spots left. And again, this is assuming they're already adding in the first round pick. Now let's go to the seven free agents that they have on the team. So they have five players who can enter restricted free agency. Now the Spurs have until June 29th to extend the qualifying offer to these restricted free agents to make them restricted free agents. If not, they don't tender that qualifying offer, well, then they'll be unrestricted free agents going into July 1st. So the first player is Romeo Langford. He's got a $7.8 million qualifying offer. Then it's Trey Jones, like you mentioned, Colin, $6.3 million qualifying offer. You have Mamu, who is a big fan favorite there right at the end of the season. Sandro Mamu Kalashvili has a $2.2 million qualifying offer. Two players you mentioned were Dominic Barlow, a $1.8 million qualifying offer for a two-way roster spot. And then Julian Champagne, who had a good ending to the year with a $1.8 million qualifying offer as well for a two-way spot. They have two under 60 free agents. They're veteran players, which are Gorgui Jang and then also Kata Bates-Jop, who was a big role player for them this past season. So again, we don't know exactly which players the Spurs are going to tender qualifying offers to or who they're trying to pursue. But what I want to do here, Colin, is kind of let's try to project where their contract ranges fall. So we have let's see here, 1, 2, 5 different categories. We have a cap space deal. This means that this free agent's going to get $11.5 million or more out on the market. We have the mid level deal, which is between $7.1 million and $11.4 million. We have a tax deal, which is like $6 to $7 million. And then we have a room deal, a room exception deal, which is like $3.1 million to about $5.9 million. And then the veteran minimum deal, which is like $1.1 to about $3 million. Now, again, some of these exceptions are going to go up when the new CBA numbers do come in. But we just kind of want to gauge, where do you see a deal for this kind of player going, whether it's with the Spurs or with another team? So let's begin with Romeo Langford. What kind of deal do you expect him to see in this offseason, whether it's from San Antonio or another team?
That's a tough one because, like, I think mm-hmm. When he plays, like, if he was healthy, 82 games, right, and he always like had the 20 to 25 minutes, I think he's worth well more than $8 million. Like, I think I see him as a pretty productive player when he's out there, especially like $8 million in 2023 isn't what $8 million in 2017 was. It's hard because you're always constantly having to like account for cap inflation. But the injuries do make it a little bit hard. I kind of honestly feel like that $8 to $12 million range. Like I think the new room is what I would say. The new room exception is
which is like what do we say? 7.6 million?
Yeah, 7.6. So I think what's very interesting is for a long time there was like a level of, this player is an MLE level player, and now that the room exception actually has a little bit more beef to it, I think there's going to be a new tier, this player is an MLE player. Oh, this player maybe isn't worth a full MLE or not worth, but like this player isn't someone who would demand a full MLE on the open market, but they're like the room exception would be a good call. I feel like he might be right there. Like his qualifying offer for next year might be within a good range of what a team could pay him and to take a bargain on him.
Okay, so I'm with you. My only hesitancies, say the room deal area, is that he just, you know, the fact that he's always getting injured, and we saw that this past season, even on a perfect team where he would have had plenty of opportunity, he got had. It's not his fault. I mean, he's getting injured. It just happened a lot. And so I don't know if teams would be hesitant where, like, you know, I could see teams only want to give him just the max veteran minimum just because of, you know, his injury history. I would say the room deal, but the bad thing there too is that, again, if you're talking about a room team, it's probably a rebuilding team. Teams that have cap space, like the Spurs, like I think like the Rockets supposed to have cap space, those kind of teams, you know, it's definitely not like a playoff level team that's probably gonna have the room deal. So I agree with you there. I would go more so in that room salary range. Let's go to Trey Jones. He has a $6.3 million qualifying offer. What kind of deal do you think he might get this offseason?
So this is difficult because I think that the Spurs maybe should overpay a little bit. Like, I don't know what exactly his market value is, but I do think that the Spurs keeping him as like their, like, he's not like Patty Mills in how he plays, but I could see him being the Patty Mills of the 2020s, right? Where he's the backup point guard. He's a really good energy guy. He's a really good locker room guy. The things that he's good at, he's really good at. And he knows what he's good at and what his limitations are. Like, I think the Spurs need to keep Trey Jones as long as they should. So I do think he's starting to get closer to like the MLE type player, because like, I just think that you don't want to lose him. And I think that he's valuable. And I think that he's one of those kind of guys where like an NBA fan who really only follows their team, you know, if their team got Trey, they'd be like, I don't know who Trey is. But then by the playoffs, they'd be like, oh my gosh, Trey, we love Trey. You know, I think he's a very important player for the culture of the Spurs going forward. And I think if, you know, even if a team was like trying to threaten them with like a $12 or $13 million restricted free agent offer sheet, like they need to go for that. Like, obviously they need a walkaway number, but for me, that walkaway number is higher than I think a lot of people would expect, just because like, he's the kind of player they need to keep on this roster while they're rebuilding.
Okay, I'm with you there. I do think he's in the mid-level area. I think that, you know, playoff teams would definitely want him. He'd be a really good backup point guard. When your star gets injured, he's there he can start games for you. And then, I'm with you there. You know, if they get to $11.4 million, that's when, you're right, does San Antonio have to overpay a little bit, $12, $13 million maybe they have to start looking at to keep him. So, and you know, and again, it also depends on what the lottery happens. Like you said, right, if they get Scoot Henderson, well then, hey, you know, they have an easier walkaway number from Trey. But if they get Victor Wembanyama or like, you know, a Brandon Miller kind of player, a wing or a big, well, then they need a guard there. And Trey already knows kind of the offense, you know, he's been there for multiple years. So then maybe they do need to do that overpay for him a little bit. So I agree with you there. I'd say like the MLE. And again, it's actually not 7.1 to 11.4. It's that new range that I think that got a little bit of a bump. All right, let's go with Mamu. $2.2 million qualifying offer. Where do you see him? Considering that he got waived by the Bucks earlier this year, but then he made a little bit of a bounce here with San Antonio, but he was more so an end of the bench rotation player. I mean, not even rotation player, end of the bench player for Milwaukee.
Yeah. I think he's kind of honestly still at that same level, like the qualifying offer, the vet minimum. And the only reason I say that is because I think that at the end of the season on these teams that don't really have, and like,
you know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Watching him play the way that he did, it was awesome. I think that there is some skepticism on teams because people have gotten burned before when a player has a performance like they have at the end of the season. Because a team is resting a lot of their best players, team is not playing a lot of their best players, and now all of a sudden a guy gets usage that they normally wouldn't get. And it's not just usage, but it's like zero pressure usage. You know, a big playoff team bringing in Mamu and saying, hey, you're running every down for us, and if you lose, like, there's going to be a lot of consternation and anger. It's just like, no one cares. You go run 80% of the possessions. I mean, that's not what he did, but, you know, like, run a bunch of the possessions. And the outcome, like, if you score, everyone's happy. If you don't, no one really cares. Like, that, I think, in the past has blinded teams, and they've made big mistakes to that. And I think that teams are really hesitant in those situations now. I think that teams want to see those kinds of players prove it before they really give them longer-term, more financially secure deals. So, honestly, the qualifying offer or, like, a long, you know, the vet minimum, you know, as we're kind of confused on what the second round exception is, if he's a guy that's eligible for it, where a team can lock him up for 4 years at the vet minimum, maybe he's that kind of player. And like, what he was doing was very exciting. I think there is like a sense of hesitation of, is that the player he's going to be for 82 games on a team that's like at least trying to be competitive?
I agree with you 100% there, where, like, you know, what if Jeremy Sohan's healthy? What if Charles Bassey's healthy when Mamu joins the team? You know, is he getting those kind of minutes? And I really feel like he got a great opportunity, you know, because a lot of those players were in front of him were injured. But, you know, when training camp starts and everybody's fully healthy to start day one, is he able to crack the rotation like he was doing at the end of the season? So I think that's a good case for San Antonio in terms of, like, you know, around that qualifying offer amount, $2.2 million, even if they have to do a slight overpay just to get him, because he's only been in the league for a few years, so he actually wouldn't get up to the $3 million mark of the veteran minimum. But so just going a little bit further, like we saw with Charles Bassett, they were even like $2.5 million, that kind of a deal. So again, you could do a slight overpay, but definitely not, like, you know, not where you're going to go into those exception type of areas. So I think that that's a good, and that bodes well for San Antonio, the fact that they probably can outbid teams that are interested in him in terms of trying to re-sign him. Then we have the two players. We have a Dominic Barlow here, $1.8 million qualifying offer. And again, this is to come back on a two-way spot. Where do you still see him more so as a veteran minimum kind of player league-wide?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, I think part of this is I'm trying to look at his market, not only league-wide, but also within the Spurs, you know? And I think, you know, you see 7 free agents here on the last slide. You had 4 open roster spots. But one of the ways that kind of gets uncrunched a little bit is the fact that there's a third two-way now, and some of these players can be signed to two-ways again. And I don't know, is Julian Champigny, is this his third year in the league now? Like, is he no longer two-way eligible?
I'm not 100% sure. I'll look it up while you.
Okay. Yeah, because I think the decision that the Spurs are going to make with 3 two-way spots now is keeping one of those two guys two-way. And if Julian's not even eligible anymore, then that makes the decision a little bit easier. Maybe keep the other one as like the 15th roster guy and then take their 2 second-round picks and make them two-ways. So now you have the 3 two-ways. One of them was the two-way that was there before. One of the two-ways is converted to a full NBA contract. And now you're able to sign your 2 second round picks while not having a roster crunch. I think to me, that kind of seems like a path forward. But in both situations, I think this $1.8 million qualifying offer, the normal 2A contract, the veteran minimum, like all of those things make sense for both of these players. It's just about like how they're going to set up which one is going to become a full roster, which one's going to be a two-way, and then sign your other two second-round picks to the other two two-ways. And now you're set up where you still have these. Because like one of the things about rebuilding is you want to kind of gather as many lottery tickets as you can. And like even if Dominic Barlow, Julian Champagny, one of these other two draft picks in the second round becomes the seventh or eighth player in the rotation. I think, you know, a home run is exciting. Drafting Manu or Jokic in the second round is exciting. But I think what people need to understand is for these two-way guys, for the second round picks that the Spurs have coming up, a seventh or eighth player in a rotation, someone who can play in the playoffs but is going to come off the bench, is an incredibly good outcome. Like getting an NBA player from these spots are good outcomes. And so these players are lottery picks, and I think these players still have the capacity to show that that's who they are. And so I think the Spurs will want to keep them around for that reason. It's just a matter of like how are they going to kind of get this set up where they can keep one of them on a two-way and then the other one on a full contract.
Okay, I agree with you there. And so I looked, and he only had one experience in the league. He just played this past season. Nice. Was his only time logging time with San Antonio and Philadelphia. I agree with you there, where you know you try to get them both. I think you just tried to get them both on two-way roster spots because as good as ending of the season that Champagne had, you know, again, you're really tightening up that those available spots. Now, if it came to a situation where you had to choose who do you want to give an actual roster spot to, I would actually go with Champagne over Barlow at this point. I'd rather just let Barlow, get Barlow back on a two-way, let him go have another season in Austin, probably finish out in San Antonio. Because we saw his strides. He made strides, but they weren't until very late in the season. So, again, I think he's got some potential. But, again, I think you want to see him just continue to get some more development minutes there with the G League. And then, Gorgui Dieng, we both probably expect him to get a veteran minimum deal if he goes back to San Antonio or another team. But let's go to Katie Bates Chow, because he's an interesting player, because he had a pretty good season, like I said, for San Antonio. He's a veteran player. You know, they really relied on him to fill in whenever players were injured. But you could also see him maybe getting some minutes on a playoff team. Where do you think his range is, Katie Bates Chow?
I think that's another like room to not all of the new MLE, but like a team using part of their MLE on him.
Oh, okay. I think the early stages of it, like that 7.1 million to like 8 million.
Yeah. Cause I think like on his nights where his play is clicking, like that's a solid bench contributor for a team, you know, and their games, I think, especially again, late in the season when the Spurs really needed that, we were seeing that a good bit. And I think it's just that he has the tools to be like that rotation contributor. It's just like, are we going to see it on a consistent every night basis? And I think that's really his calling card at this point, is kind of seeing that.
Okay, I'm with you there too. I'm gonna say more so like the tax kind of deal from like a playoff team that's kind of, you know, like the Clippers or something, you know, one of those teams that are in the tax. And if not the early stages of the MLE, like you said, 7-8 million maybe max, definitely not the full MLE from a team. So, because I think he definitely would bring value to like a veteran team. A team that needs like playoff experience. So I guess my last question for you for this part is, I'm not saying they're going to actually come back to San Antonio, but who do you at least think that they'll give a qualifying offer to, or at least try to re-sign out of these players from the seven free agents?
Yeah. So the first one I want to say, because it's a different kind of thing altogether. Let's say Gorgui can't like stick around. I wonder if they offer him like a coaching contract or something. Cause like he's left the Spurs
like four times this year.
And he keeps coming back. Obviously, he like loves the culture. He loves the organization, and the organization loves him. You know, the fact that like signing a contract is a two-way street here. And like, you know, every single time he's come to the Spurs, it's been through signing a contract, which means both parties are mutually coming to this agreement. So, you know, obviously there's something that both parties really like about each other. And I actually think that that means that there's a good chance that they would want to use one of their roster spots on it. Like, we've seen the Spurs really appreciate that kind of thing in the past. You know, when Matt Bonner wasn't really playing as much, he had a roster spot until he retired, you know, because they really value the organizational like guys. They value the people who care and have the right attitude and all that kind of stuff. Besides that, I'm thinking, looking at this list, Romeo and Mamu are like my two wild cards. I think Trey, Barlow, and Champagne are like the definite like priority to keeps. And then KBD is like, as long as he stays, like, I think they internally on some whiteboard say, here's the number we feel comfortable with. And if he stays within that range, they do. I mean, I think KBD is a player that they probably are going to prioritize as well. But I think that those three players, Jones, Barlow, and Champagne, are like the three that I think they're going to prioritize the most, because I think that these next 2 years are going to be about the draft more than they are about the free agency process. So I think that those three players all make a lot of sense in terms of like trying to build going forward.
Okay. So I'm going to go with you as well with Trey, Champagne and Barlow. They're going to definitely tend to those three players qualifying offers, in my opinion. I think also Mamu, I think that from what we just kind of praise that he got from Pop, again, it's not a high risk offer, $2.2 million qualifying offer. I think that Mamu, they would send him that qualifying offer. And then of course, if there's a team that tries to outbid them, then, you know, they'll probably just let him walk. I think Mamu, they really like. I'm not so sure about Langford. He's the one that I don't think they would give a qualifying offer to. And then as far as the free agents, so I agree with you with Gorgui Dieng. If they fill the roster and we get up to like, you know, opening days coming or training camps coming and they have 14 roster spots filled, I think that they just give that final roster spot to Gorgui Dieng. And even if they have to waive him and then bring him back, like we saw this year, four or five times, I mean, again, they just want him as a locker room presence for those young players. I think they really like him. So him, I'm going to wait and see. And then Keita, I think in terms of the organization, I feel like there's always going to be a roster spot there for him. So like, I think their approach might be like, go see if maybe you can find a playoff level team. Mm-hmm. You're definitely getting elder there, and you could definitely try to play for a playoff team, try to win a championship. But if you can't find that type of deal, maybe you just come back to San Antonio. We have a roster spot for you. Again, you're there to, he's a really good player to just help out whatever they're sustaining injuries, things like that. So, yeah, so that's kind of where I'm at as well. All right. So let's go to our next topic here. So again, there's seven free agents. And again, we do want to consider that there's only four open roster spots. All right. So now let's go look at some cap space projections. And again, these are very early numbers. So what I've done is I've laid out a few different scenarios here. So let's assume that the Spurs, get very lucky in the lottery and they end up getting the number one pick. So they get to draft Victor Wembanyama. Well, if they get Wembanyama, well, then he's going to actually take up the most salary in terms of those potential draft areas. So he would get about $11.9 million in year one of his new deal. So with Wemby and no free agents, so let's say they let Trey Jones walk, you know, all those players, they could have up to $36.7 million in cap space. Let's say that they get Wemby, they extend the qualifying offers to Trey Jones, Mamu, Barlow, and Champagne, like we talked about, then they'd still have $25.8 million in cap space. And so If they do use their cap space, well, then they're going to have that new $7.6 million room exception they can use. And I also have here the ranges for where they end up getting the first round pick. So if they get the first pick, that pick in year one, that player's salary will be $11.9 million. Then the second round pick is going to be $10.7 million. Third pick, is $9.6 million. Fourth pick, $8.6 million. Then it goes all the way down to the seventh slot, which is $6.5 million. So again, if they get the higher that they draft, the less cap space they have. But then the lower that they draft, the more cap space they're going to have. So my question to you, Colin, would be, they don't have enough, even if, like I said, even if they got Wemby, but they let everybody else walk, they don't have enough to offer like a max free agent contract to a player with unless that player is like in 0 to 7 years experience. So they don't have enough to like go get like that veteran player on a max deal. What do you think their approach is going to be, considering they're going to still be a young team? You know, they're barely going into year two of this rebuild. What do you think their approach would be like this season, where like they're kind of just keeping their cap space to try to bring in, you know, maybe tradable contracts and then get draft picks? Or do you think they'll be more active in trying to pursue free agents?
I definitely don't think they're going to be super active. I guess, you know, obviously, like, I think there are some, you know, just looking at the discourse, some people believe if you get Wemby, then you just turn it on to 60 right away. I don't think they do that. But I do think that maybe at that point you try to go after a couple of the younger, like, available players that like might have some talent on them, and you're a little bit more aggressive in that regard. But like, I think still for this upcoming year, I think really you're targeting. So like, let's say last summer was year zero, and then this is year one, year two, and year three, and then year four, you're hoping to make the playoffs. I think year two and year three is really where you're hoping to like make some big additions to your team via free agency after you've done it in the draft. I think year zero, you know, was like the big teardown. And then year one, I think they're still going to be hoping to add bad contracts and take assets on in return for that. I think they would have done that last year. They would have gone into the season with $0 if they could. You know, I mean, they would have been a third team in a Westbrook trade if they needed to be, if it would have been at the right price for them before the season, I'm almost sure of. Unfortunately, there's not a whole lot of bad contracts in the league anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the contracts that weren't really great got resolved this year on the buyout market. So, you know, there is, you know, the first one that comes to mind is Ben Simmons. You know, like, do they want another shooter on their roster, the Nets, around, you know, they added some defense in the trades that they sent out. Do they want to bring in Doug McDermott and be willing to send out some assets to the Spurs to take on? But, you know, they depleted their assets, regained their assets. Like, they're in such a whirlwind position. I don't know if they would do that. That something like that, where it's a team that's like, hey, we're kind of married to this guy for 2 or 3 years, but it's kind of tying up our cap space. We can send him to the Spurs along with hopefully what's a late round first for that team because they're hoping to compete or whatnot. But if they can't get that kind of thing, then just keep it open to continue to use it like they did this year, where you're trying to find guys on the margins. And, you know, if you do that 20 times and 3 of them pop for you, then that's like a huge win. Like, again, like that's the kind of thing that a championship level team does. Like, you have to have the first or second all NBA talent, but you also need those guys around them that make that good. And so I think to have 10 bites at the apple throughout the season because you're signing and waiving players, like, that is very valuable. And I think having that space open, like, obviously if you can get first round picks for the space, you do that. But if you can't do that, then you leave it open for what they did this year. That's my take on it.
Okay. I'm with you in terms of two mindsets. If they get Wembanyama again, I don't agree with you that they're going to go, you know, fully, hey, let's go make the playoffs next year, or let's go straight for the play-in game. I think, though, that they would do more so of looking at free agency as far as, like, does a free agent currently out there fit with Wembanyama, like, 2 or 3 years from now, like, when we start really putting the team together? Is there a player we can lock up now for, like, a 4-year deal where, like, in year 2 and in year 3 and 4, that player is, you know, definitely going to come into that role that we want next to Wembanyama on the side there, whether it's off the bench or starting? So I think that's how they would approach free agency if they got Wembanyama, in terms of looking at their long-term plan, who fits with them within the next few years where they can be a competitive team pretty quickly. Now, if they don't get Wembanyama and they get, you know, picks 2 through whatever 7, then I think that they're going to be the same as this year, where they're going to just keep that cap space, try to take some contracts for picks, that kind of situation. So I think that's kind of be their approach. So again, it really, just like you said earlier to start this episode, it really depends on what happens in the lottery. You know, I think that in terms of their paths there in free agency. So we'll see what happens there with the caps. But those are kind of the initial cap space projections for San Antonio. That's assuming that the cap is at $134 million that's been being projected. And now the last topic, Colin, let's talk about is a possible extension for Devin Vassell. So currently Vassell will be earning $5.9 million next season in 23-24. Then if he doesn't sign an extension with the Spurs, then he'll be a restricted free agent in 24-25 the summer with an $8 million qualifying offer. So according to Bobby Marks of ESPN, Vassell projects to see an extension that starts, again, the word is starts, in the $17 million range. That makes sense. I would actually expect him to be more in the $20 million range. And what we have seen, the Spurs try to lock up a lot of these players early before they can hit restricted free agency lately in terms of guards and wings. So we saw DeJounte Murray get an extension. We saw Derek White get an extension. We even saw Keldon Johnson last year get an extension, where Keldon's is like $20 million in year one, but then it drops off to 17.5, that kind of deal. It's like a 4-year deal before those players were able to enter restricted free agency. Now, if you want to just know what is the max that Vassell would get if he were to just look for a max offer this offseason, which he can't because he's still under contract, would be a $33.5 million. So that's kind of, again, we're looking at like starting level $17 million, but then his max level is $33.5 million. And I don't know the specific date, but it's usually extensions need to be done before the first game of the regular season or Halloween, October 31st. Do you expect the Spurs to reach an agreement with Vassell before that time frame comes? Whether it's like in the, you know, a little bit less, you know, probably, I mean, a little bit more than $17 million, maybe in the early 20s.
Yeah, no, and that's when I kind of saw the notes that you had, you know, my first thought was, you know, Bobby Marks is great at this stuff. So he's source and all that kind of stuff. But to me, if my job was being Devin Vassell's agent, I think, and I came to the Spurs and they were like, hey, you know, average annual value of $17 million. I would say, hey, why is Devin getting less than Keldon is? And not in a bad way, but like the cap inflation, like what we talked about, and just there's just these little flashes with Devin where it's like, if these start to become a more consistent part of his game, he is a valuable player. And they're not there enough that you would give him the max extension or anything like that, but they're just frequent enough where I think it is important to the Spurs to lock him up. And I am like you, as his agent, I would want to, if I were his agent, I would want to see 22 or 23 is like the starting place. Yeah. in not descending like Keldon's. It's like, hey, let's either keep it level or have it go up. Like, and that's, I honestly think that's incredibly fair. Like 22 with max raises is something that I think would be a win for the Spurs, because I do think that those flashes are there. And if I was his agent, I would definitely be like, you know, no, there's, we're not taking less than Keldon, because even, let's just even take inflation into it and have the same amount as Keldon, but impacted for where the cap went, you know, like, So I'm with you. I think they should make it a huge priority, but I don't think they're walking out of there with it being lower than 22 million starting and probably ascending raises instead of the descending.
Okay, so you're actually going higher than me. I mean, you actually go lower than me. I was actually going to say, like, yeah, start, you know, 22, 23, but I was going to say even as high as 25, like, you know, just starting discussions there, because we got to remember, if he goes into restricted free agency the following summer, I'm actually pulling up the numbers because I should have done this. My apologies here. What is that? What is the max level for him next summer? So look at this. His max next summer, let's just say they don't reach an agreement, it could be 35.1 million. So yeah, I mean, you're getting him, you would be still be signing for 10 million less than his max. And again, in the Spurs' camp, you know, again, he definitely showed strides. You know, that's the reason why you're giving him this big amount. But also, you know, he had an injury history this year where he only played like 38 games. So again, I would even say, you know, I'd be comfortable with just 25 million easily as the baseline, just because, like, again, you got to look at what would he get on the open market the following year. And again, his max could be up to 35 million. So in the following summer. So yeah, I do expect the Spurs and Devin to come to some sort of agreement before that deadline, whether it's the first day before the regular season in October or if it's on Halloween.
Well, I think one other thing. Go ahead. Sorry, just one more thing that is, you know, you're looking at that list: DeJounte, Derek, Keldon, and then Devin. I think one of the biggest differences is, you know, all of those players had potential to different degrees, but I think out of those four players, Devin has the most explosive potential over this next year. Like the player that we think of him now is already vastly different than what we thought of him just after year two. Yep. And it might be the case, like you said, the max, like that $35 million max, would I say it's the most likely outcome? No, but I think of all of the players that the Spurs extended, he's the one who has that pop potential. And like, I just wouldn't play games with that. And I think that the Kawhi situation, where they kind of played around with it so they could sign Aldridge and they made him go into the last year and become, and they gave him the max that he could, but players really seem to not like that. Like, when you have the ability to extend them and you don't, and you kind of play around with it, like, that seems to be something that players really hate. And so it seems like after that happened with Kawhi, the Spurs have been completely the opposite. They're not about that at all. And they try to play it a little bit safer. And just like, whatever Devin becomes, you cannot let that pop potential walk away. That's just too much. That's too, like, he could be a number two on the Spurs next playoff iteration, and that wouldn't be crazy. So you can't let that walk away from you, or you can't let that become 35 million when it could have been 25 the year before, like you're saying.
Yeah, and like you just, like, you start off our conversation, you said you asked Spurs fans who are the two most players that are the hardest to trade, and I mean, that you would say no to them in terms of trades, and it's Devin and Jeremy. Those are the two foundational pieces right now as of this moment. So yeah, I think it's a definite they have to lock him up this offseason. And I do expect both the team and Devin to come to an agreement before the extension deadline kicks in. All right, so thank you to Spurs fans, again, thank you for listening, and again, I hope Colin and I you answer some of your questions if you had any regarding the offseason. Again, we'll have more episodes in the future in terms of, like, breaking down actual free agents, and, like, you know, I know we just mentioned, you know, the kind of scenarios they should look at, but we'll actually have some names here in the coming weeks. I'll definitely have Colin on before free agency, and of course, once we get more of those final details on the CBA, I want to have Colin back on so we can really dive into that and talk about how it's going to impact the Spurs. So thank you to Colin for joining me on this episode of the Spurs Cast, and I also want to say thank you to Joe Garcia for mixing and producing this episode. From all of us at Project Spurs, stay safe and have a great day.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.